You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, today on the podcast, we're at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club with Matt Hobbs, Nate Thompson, and Bobby Wernis, Arkansas's baseball assistant coaches, for a roundtable. We'll get to it in just a moment, but first, a word from Kendall King.
Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
The mic, okay, all right, now use the mic. We got Matt Hobbs here, Arkansas pitching coach, Bobby Wernis, and Nate Thompson too. And we'll start with this. You guys, Bobby came here before the 2021 season. And in those 5 years, I was thinking about this on the way up here today, two SEC championships, three Western Division championships, multiple 50-win seasons, multiple College World Series, multiple national semifinals, multiple Golden Spikes Award winners. And I could keep going, but I think, you know, it kind of hammers home the point that it's been pretty good. Oh, by the way, more SEC wins than any other program in the conference. Let's start with you, Matt. What's been the key to all of this? Why has it worked, especially with the three of you on staff?
It probably starts with the guy that the end of the office, you know, Coach Van Horn. I mean, I think it starts there. And the example that he sets for us as coaches is the standard is so high that, you know, as much as it's fun to work at the University of Arkansas, we all love it, we also feel a responsibility to the university, to the baseball program, to Coach Van Horn, to just make sure that we can bring it every day for our players, and whether it's recruiting, whether it's player development, whether it's looking down the road at what we have to do from a schematic standpoint to get ready for games of teams that we're playing. We feel an ultimate responsibility to try to do a great job, and that's something that's instilled all the way from the top from Coach Van Horn. And you know, I think that example that you see every day is, you know, 20 plus years of being a great head coach at the university and then also a great coaching career before that. That's something that I think all of us can say that we would aspire to be at some point in our careers, and we know what it takes by the example that he sets. And then just the fact that, I mean, I hope it comes across in games, and I hope it comes across when you talk to people, but we all like each other. You know, we don't come into the office every day like dread. I don't come in there dreading to see Bobby every morning. I mean, some. Not every morning. Yeah. And me and Nate have been together for, this is now our this will be our eighth season together, and we knew each other before that. Like, we knew each other from the road when he was at Hutch and I was at Missouri. So there's always been a good connection between, whether it's the three of us, or you throw in, you know, Clay Goodwin and Zach Barr, DJ Baxendale, all these people that have been a part of this thing behind the scenes. There's just a lot of people that go into this, and I think there's good camaraderie, and then also, like I said, the example.
I want to ask you guys about fall practice. Bobby, I'll start with you, because I thought the standout from the fall was Ryder Helfrich. You watch guys in the fall, and you can kind of get an idea of what the next season's going to look like. Like, a couple of you were up here when Heston Kerstad, you know, the fall before the COVID year. But, I mean, he looked incredible, and you knew there was going to be a big year if that season didn't shut down. I know you guys think he would have won the Golden Spikes that year. But Ryder, it was that kind of fall, it felt like, for him. What did you see from him? Bobby's the catcher's coach. Maybe from a just all-around perspective, what you work with him.
Well, I think the unique thing with him is whether or not you knew it or not, he played for Team USA this summer. So they go play Japan. He finishes his summer in Japan. So I don't think we were expecting that fall. It's almost like he's going to have to get onboarded a little bit. Like, he may be down physicality-wise. He may be down weight. And I remember talking to Nate. It's like his first day at BP. It's like he took off 2 months. It's like he's so physical. It's like, how did that happen? So I think a compliment to him. Like, I've never seen a player do what he did this summer and then come back, and it's like he's even more physical. So I think that played a lot into the fall he had. So, yeah, I think that was the biggest takeaway. Obviously, technique-wise, behind the dish, he's pretty special, and he has been for 2 years. But I think one of the reasons that he had such a good fall is, obviously, the experiences playing with Team USA, that's a big deal. They don't always go overseas to play. Sometimes they stay stateside. So, yeah, for him to go to Japan, do what he did, come back, and somehow be more physical and more prepared, it was pretty special.
Nate, I want to ask you about Ryder's hitting. I was talking to him after a practice about a month or so ago, and I asked him what was different. He talked about staying, you know, in the strike zone, but he stopped himself. He said, "No, I'm staying in my zone." And I just thought that was so telling in terms of how locked in he was. What have you seen from him hitting wise?
You know, about halfway through the season last year, he made some physical adjustments with his stance and with his approach to the baseball that I think just kind of allowed him to be himself, see the baseball better, to make the kind of decisions that he wanted to make. Earlier in the year, he was pretty well spread out. He was kind of getting a little jumpy at the ball, and it was causing him to, like Coach Van Horn would say, hit about 20 home runs foul to the pull side. He was having a hard time keeping a lot of those balls fair. And to his credit, he looked at his game and made the adjustment. And after that, because he didn't feel like he had to go get it as much, he was also able to make better swing decisions. And like you said, swing at his pitch more often, get to his best swing. And, the results pretty much spoke for themselves.
Matt, from a pitching side, you guys ask your catchers to do so much. You let them call the games. You and I were talking about a month and a half, and you said that it's not an accident that it seems like every scrimmage that you have that Ryder is catching the winning team. You called him your quarterback out on the field. Just how comfortable do you think the pitchers are with him and what he's able to do behind the plate?
I think supremely comfortable in terms of his ability to not only call the game but also be able to handle what's going on in the flow of the game. I think that's something that gets overlooked sometimes. I think he does get so much credit for calling the game because Lord knows nobody wants to see me do it. But his ability to control what's going on with the pitchers, like if there is a time that they're sped up, if there is a time that, you know, they need to speed up, if there's a time when there's a lot of stuff happening around them, to be able to head out there and be able to calm them down and be an influence in the dugout too. I think that's the part we don't always see, is what he's doing in the dugout between innings. Our workflow goes me to Ryder, Ryder to the pitcher. So if I have something I need to say to a pitcher, I say it to Ryder. Ryder goes and talks to the pitchers between innings. I try to remove myself as much from that process as I possibly can till the end. And that gives that relationship with pitchers and catchers some more depth. I think that you can talk about having a pitcher-catcher relationship, but unless they're doing it that way, where he's not only helping develop the game plan, helping call the pitches, and then being the conduit between, well, you know, what's going on between the coaching staff and the players, like, that's not a real relationship until those things happen, and you start to see those things grow over time. He catches every bullpen. He doesn't take days off. I mean, this is the epitome of what you'd want from a catcher if you were building out a program of, you know, where do we want to start? We want to start behind the plate. We want to start with a leader back there, and I think that's what Ryder is. And if I'm drafting, and I'm clearly not, like, that's a first-round pick. That's a high-end first-round pick, top 20 type pick.
Bobby, Ryder can't catch every game. What's it look like behind him?
Well, no, I think it's in a backwards way. For those of you that were at the Little Rock game, I mean, what was it, first inning, second inning? He gets hit in the place where you don't want to, I guess. Mm-hmm. We'll say that. So he doesn't get to play the first two games. So obviously everyone in the room or that follows us knows how big of a piece Ryder is going to be. So it throws Kleiman into the fire, our transfer from Eastern Michigan, and I thought he did a great job for the first two games. And Coach Van Horn kind of made the comment after we were done. He's like, it's good that happened for us to get BK that experience of being the guy for two games, which honestly for all of our transfers and freshmen, like those, yeah, we call them exhibitions. Those are real games. Like fans are there, lights are on, like kind of having to feel that and play through that. So, yeah, you have BK as your number two. Willis is he's still getting there with his arm, still rehabbing that. And then you have Rutenbar who it's a bat first, really good bat, and the bat's ahead of the catch. So obviously we as coaches, that's so important defensively, like the glove, it's a glove first position, and we're fortunate this year that Ryder kind of can do both.
Nate, I want to talk to you about the outfield defense that we saw, especially in that last game against Dallas Baptist in October. If you didn't see it, if you weren't out there, it was incredible. Mike Anu made a catch up against the wall that might have taken away a home run. And then to end the fall season, essentially, Brenton Clark, he robbed a home run, and there's no video of this. Have you guys thought about looking like at surveillance videos or anything to see, like surveillance cameras? It was the day of the Tennessee football game, and so there were videographers in Knoxville. It was also the day before the basketball team had that practice down in Hot Springs, so there were videographers out there. I don't know that a video exists of this catch, and so maybe the legend of it is going to grow over time. But it was an incredible catch. I thought your outfield defense, your defense in general, was outstanding that day. What have you seen from the team in that regard?
From an outfield defensive perspective, we have we have guys that can do the job. Like we have with Micah New in center field, that's a real deal center fielder. That's somebody that can really run and catch. I got the pleasure of being in the weight room the other day and watching our guys lift, and Micah has probably the best vertical leap that I've ever seen from a baseball player. Maybe outside of Jackson Wiggins or Carson Wiggins, but it's and I don't believe he hit 47 inches actually, but that's what the jump mat said. And so it was like, heaven's sakes, he was absolutely levitating. But yeah, he's extremely athletic. He when I first saw him take some fly balls this fall, it reminded me a lot of how Braden Webb back in 2021 and 2022 could move out there and defend. And he was a good defender for us as well. And so, we when you have Ruiz and Clark also out there, I think we have some guys that can really run and go get the baseball.
Cahillo Aloy, you're working him out at right field. That was a little bit of a work in progress last season. What's he look like?
He's improved. He's definitely improved. Everything's getting a little smoother and a little easier all the time. He has the ability to just make standard catches now, and he actually has pretty good wheels when he's underway. So he can go get the baseball in a gap, and the piece that he really brings to it is his right arm. For those of you that don't know, Cujillo, his freshman year at Brigham Young, was a pitcher primary during fall ball that year, and let's just say he has the strongest arm from the outfield on the team. It's a real weapon. So we'll see how that continues to develop and translate. Zach Stewart is out there as well, another transfer from Missouri State University, and does a nice job.
Micah, when you guys got him, there was so much talk about his offense and what he had done up at the Cape. He was the Cape Cod MVP this year. I think maybe the defense took me by surprise, at least based on what I had read about him, because he was transitioning from the infield to the outfield, and then you just didn't hear a whole lot about his defense.
Well, it was funny. I want to say this was maybe August 20th, day after school started, and we had a little session in the outfield, about 30 minutes worth of time doing hitting fly balls and using the fungo machine and that sort of thing with the guys, and he came up to me afterwards. He goes, "That's the first ever outfield practice I've had in my life," and so I thought, well, that's a pretty good start. So. Because he's been traditionally a shortstop infielder his entire life, and so I think it's a good thing for him, good thing for us that he's in the outfield now and has a chance to be a pretty darn good defender and solidify that position.
Matt, I want to ask you some about pitchers. Let's start with maybe one that is a little under the radar. Not under your radar, I know, but Steele Eaves. Every time I came out and watched him this fall, I had to do a double take because there were actually two different outings where he threw 20 pitches and he threw 17 strikes in both of them. And so that's an 85% strike percentage. That's usually a pretty good predictor for success. What did you see from him, and how does he fit your role this year?
He fits a bunch of different roles. I mean, he's a pretty dynamic weapon in the bullpen because he can do so many different things. He can extend and throw you three or four innings out of the pen. He can shorten up, click his stuff up a little bit, and throw like the 20 pitches that you saw him throw, or he could go with a little higher end stuff. He can stand out there and throw strikes. He can defend. He fields his position. It's kind of like your ideal pitcher. And the only thing that's not ideal is Steele's a 6-foot right-handed pitcher that throws 93, 94 miles an hour. And I think when you start talking about those end of the game roles, everybody expects that guy's going to throw 100 now. And that's just really not the case, honestly. Like, if you look around, there's good pitchers in all kinds of different velocity ranges. But Steele gives us a lot of versatility. You could look at him as kind of like that. I actually met with the pitchers this past couple days for the end of the fall meetings. And I'm not saying he's going to be this guy, certainly. But you could – he's the one pitcher I've had since Kevin Copps that you could look at that kind of a role where he pitches an inning on Friday and three innings on Sunday – and he's able to be durable and bounce back. The thing that's probably the best thing about Steele, in addition to the strikes and the stuff and all of those intangibles, is just the intangibles. He's just a really, really tough kid from the state. It's really important to him. He, like a lot of freshmen, if you look around the country, he threw 7 innings last year roughly. Those kids transfer now. Those kids leave. Those kids hit the portal. Those kids look for greener pastures, and that never crossed Steele's mind at all. Like, he's a Razorback through and through, and I think that might be one of his strengths is how important this is to him. And I feel like the roles are really limitless for a guy like Steele. Mm-hmm. You could have him in a bunch of different roles. I mean, I know that we all look at him as a reliever right now. There's nothing to say he can't start. Like, I'm not saying he's going to do that, but there's nothing holding him back. He doesn't lack pitches to start or strikes or any of the variables you need to be a starter. So he could do a bunch of different things, which is exciting for us as a coaching staff.
And I hate to make this comparison, and I'm not talking about stuff, but Gage Wood was one that you talked about in a very similar manner where the first year he could have left and gone somewhere, but you saw how much that meant to him, and we saw how that turned out.
Yeah, I think that's a great parallel to make, and mainly in the fact that these kids, you know, if you pour into them and it's important to them and you end up with the right ones, like Coach Thompson was saying in recruiting, you end up mitigating some of those transfers. And you end up getting kids like Steele to stay around and Gage Wood to stay around. And, you know, he didn't get to finish out his junior year because he got hurt. But, you know, Jackson Wiggins probably in today's day and age leaves after his sophomore year because he didn't pitch in Omaha or he didn't pitch in the same role in Omaha. And those kids have all stayed. And those are high-end players. Like, those are two, you know, Jax is going to pitch in the big leagues for the Cubs this year. He was a 50th overall pick or something like that. And Woody was the 26th overall pick last year for the Phillies. These are high-end players. And there was no us coercing them to stay, frankly. Like, we obviously let them know that we wanted them as part of the program, but it wasn't like we were begging them to stay. They wanted to be here, and that matters when you start thinking about building a team and a culture. And when you have a person like a Steele Eaves that you now could project a bigger role in the future, that matters. And there's a lot of those stories if you'll just look around the team. You look at the pitching staff specifically, it's like Tate McGuire and Colin Fisher are both rarely used pitchers for the first 2 years of their career. And look at the landscape of the sport, like whether it's basketball, baseball, or football, or any of the sports. Most of those people just look at, well, I'm going to go over here and I'm going to play a lot and it's going to be better. And they skip the part that makes these kids end up making these kids great is the struggle. And I think that if you look at a lot of the history of our program and some of the success stories, a lot of those kids, our kids, have not skipped that part of it. They've stayed through the struggle and they've been better for it.
Hunter Dietz, he may be the perfect example of what you're talking about right there. There was a lot of interest in him, obviously, this fall with the injuries that he's gone through. It seems like, at least from a velocity, he's back to where you want to see him, and maybe he's on a good path to where you want him to be when the spring starts.
Yeah, with the velocity, obviously. I mean, he was anywhere from, I think his average fastball velocity this fall was about 96, and he was anywhere from 95 to 99. And his breaking stuff has clicked up also. He's throwing a cutter anywhere from 88 to 92 miles an hour, and his curveball's in the low 80s, and his changeup's kind of like an 83 to 86 mile an hour offering. And those are up for him from anything he's ever done here. So his stuff is better. He's throwing harder. He also threw more strikes. He had three walks the entire fall to I believe it was 15 strikeouts. And that's for me, what does it mean if you're going to try to start somebody? They got to be able to fill it. They got to be able to fill the strike zone. And they got to have really good stuff. He has both of those things. He's got the characteristics of a starter. He's a big physical kid. He's durable. I know it doesn't seem that way because he hasn't pitched in 2 years, but he will be durable. And then the best thing about him is obviously what I just talked about with those other kids is there's another example of somebody that it's not going well. There's a lot of expectations for this kid. And he's finally healthy and being able to live up to those things, and he's doing it here with us. The best thing he did all fall was the outing he had against DBU. It wasn't an event anymore that he was pitching. Like, it's been that way for a couple of years now. It's like, well, whenever Dietz is back, then everything will be okay. Or when Dietz pitches, it was like an event when he'd throw a bullpen. And now it's turned into he just went out and threw two scoreless innings. He didn't have five strikeouts. He didn't totally dominate. He pitched very well. But it didn't have to be an event. It could just be this kid's going out there and he's throwing his innings, and everyone could kind of – I hope for us, at least for us as a coaching staff, but everyone can kind of relax and let the kid grow up and pitch.
Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King. We are Soapbox. We are ShopCart. We are Design.
Hey, we'll get you out to the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club again here in just a moment. I want to tell you that our friends at Bentonville Glass have been serving their community since 1971. They're committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at BentonvilleGlass.com. Now back up to Springdale for more of the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club with Arkansas's baseball assistant coaches. You all know Tony Vitello. Matt, you played with him at Missouri. Bobby, you played for him. Nate, you've recruited against him for a long time. Bobby, I want to ask you this, though. As I was writing something about him this week, I don't know how many people realize this. In the last 45 years, there have only been two coaches who have gone directly from a college dugout to a Major League Baseball dugout. And then Wes Johnson and Tony Vitello, who were both on staff here in 2017. Kind of crazy how that works out. Bobby, I was just thinking about how different things look, and you were playing.
We are Kendall King. We are
in the building now every day.
We are Shop Cart.
How different
we are design
are things right now versus when you were playing?
That's a really cool question. So I guess I remember, so my junior year, I decide I'm going to sign with the Astros. I get drafted. And I remember telling my dad, like, I'm kind of choked up. I'm like, God, it doesn't get better than this. Like, we had just built the Fowler, brand new indoor. Benintendi won the Golden Spikes. Went to Omaha, and I'm just like, man, this is the high mark. And then look, 10 years later, it's like the program is in a absolute different stratosphere than where it was. So I don't know if that answers your question. I think it's a lot different than just the expectation. When I was a player, I kind of viewed our program as we were the two seed that you didn't want to be in a regional. Like, you didn't want to be paired up with us. And now it's the sky's falling if we're not a top eight national seed. Like, it's an unbelievable leap. So I think, to just put it simply, I remember leaving as a player thinking, man, like, how could it get any better than this? And now back as a coach is like, oh my goodness, it's in a completely different level.
You played third base. You coached third base during the scrimmages. I wonder about the third baseman this year. TJ Pompey is a transfer in from Texas Tech. Carson Brumbaugh is a freshman who I was just really impressed with during the fall. Looks really advanced for someone his age. What have you seen between those two at third base? Because it seems like maybe who's not the third baseman's going to potentially be a shortstop.
Yeah, there may be something to that for sure. I think, they're both, I guess, to just make it easy, Pompey to start with has kind of like a traditional third base body, because it's kind of something that, I mean, he's lankier than Brummy. When we got him from Texas Tech, just quite frankly, the scouts were kind of questioning the defense, and that was something that had been told to us, and Coach Van Horn does an incredible job with our infielders, obviously. And that's been a priority kind of from the jump is, scouts don't really think you can do this, and kind of, can you prove them wrong? And I think he's done that this fall. Whether or not he ends up at shortstop or third, it's kind of up to him at this point. And then Brummy for a little bit. He's kind of, and it's kind of going back to what Matt says, and just he's like the perfect high school guy in that he's high profile enough, or he could have signed out of high school if he wanted to, made the choice to come to school. And like, you have to have those players as a foundation. Like, it can't just be 9 portal bats every year. Like, you have to have the Carson Brumbaughs, the high end high school guys that are willing to turn down money to spend 3 years at Arkansas to hopefully really make money down the road. I think Brumbaugh is that kind of player. And I know, Coach T has a lot of thoughts too on him. I just think his mental aptitude for a freshman is pretty impressive. And he was really good on the mound too. So I think the physical tools are there with Brumbaugh, but I just think his mental maturity for a freshman is pretty remarkable.
Well, Nate, let me ask you a follow-up then on Carson Brumbaugh. What has been so impressive in terms of his development at this stage in his life?
Well, we recruited him in high school, and he was just an all-around really good player. Like, could really defend, had a strong bat, had some power, and he could also really pitch, and he can still really pitch. Maybe not as much for this year's team as Coach Hobbs would like, because of what we need him for from an offensive perspective, and we're going to try to keep balancing that in the right way. But, a guy that just continued to develop. And so he has good bat speed, but he really rotates in an exceptional way. And there's a lot of power in there. Now it's like all about how can we get to it enough. And so I'll just tell you this little story real quick. He first day of batting practice this fall, didn't exactly crush his first round of BP. He actually had a hard time getting it out of the turtle. And Coach Van Horn told him you're supposed to hit the ball outside of the cage, jokingly. And he made some adjustments, and after that had a pretty good day. And ever since then, it's been pretty solid all the way around. But he has real strength in the bat, the ability to drive the baseball to the opposite field for power. And he's got a special twitch in there that not a lot of freshmen have. And the other thing I'll say is when he came in this summer with Coach Hunter Bell, that was a big deal for him because he made a real move in his strength and in his power right there and during that six-week period. And I think it set him up well for the fall and put him in a strong position for this season to start with.
Carson's a two-way guy down the road. You got Luke Cornelison, who might be a two-way guy for you too. Committed a two-way guy, I know. It seems like maybe a two-way, that is coming back in, like it's necessary with the way that the roster changes are happening.
It's going to be helpful more and more in the future for sure, just because we have fewer players available and the way the NCAA has changed that whole situation, we have to have some guys that can do that. The fact of the matter is like being a two-way guy is extremely difficult. You know, you're watching Shohei Ohtani do it at the big league level, and it's really pretty much unlike anything anyone's really ever seen at that level. We've recruited some two-way guys before. We've had some in the program. It just takes what it takes to be competitive at that level with the bat and with the arm. And so we're going to continue to look for it. At the end of the day, though, usually the player ends up picking one or the other based on their ability to compete and perform and help us win. So it's an important thing going forward, though, more and more.
You guys had great offensive numbers last year. Bobby's at third base because you're not anymore, Nate. You're in the dugout. You and Coach Van Horn both were real adamant that you thought that helped you in terms of being able to run an offense last year. Just take people through that process and what worked.
You know, as the hitting coach, if you're standing over at third base all the time, there's just always that little quick moment in your head where you feel like you need to be able to communicate something to them in game, in the moment, while they're on deck, while they're in the hole. And when you're standing over at third base, you don't have the opportunity to do it. You'd only have 60 seconds in between innings to try to touch a guy here and there. And so it's been very helpful from that standpoint, and the opportunity to, you know, collaborate with Coach Van Horn on what do we want to do here. In this moment, do we want to hit and run? Do we want to bunt? Do we just want to let our guy hit? That sort of thing. And then the other piece for me is you know, I take a lot of pride in being able to affect their guys' mindsets, not just from an approach standpoint, but just what we're trying to do at the plate from a competitive standpoint. And once again, just being in that position versus being all the way out at third base was a big deal for me. And as you look throughout college baseball, and certainly at the big league level, you're seeing the hitting coach be in the dugout. So it was an adjustment we wanted to make that we thought would be helpful.
Bobby mentioned Andrew Benintendi here a minute ago. Matt, I wanted to ask you something about pitching. I remember after Benintendi won the Golden Spikes, Coach Jorn's here, by the way, today. Good to see you, Coach. you might remember everybody was asking for the Benny plan that Mike Struhol had put him on the offseason before. And I was thinking about that in terms of what you guys did with Gabe Gackle. It seems like you put him on the Hagen-Smith plan. And it worked for Hagen by, you know, kind of limiting his innings the fall before he had such a big junior season for you. You done that with Gackle this fall. Where do you see him right now, and what do you see for him moving forward?
Friday night, probably. Starting on Friday night would be my guess. I mean, that's where I hope it ends up for Gack. I mean, he's so talented and supremely valuable and important to our pitching staff. If you look at the course of the last couple of years and what he's meant to us, he deserves the opportunity to do that. He'll get the first crack at it for sure, and I hope that he runs with it. But in terms of what we did with him this offseason, it went a lot to what Bobby was talking about earlier with Ryder. I mean, he was on that same Team USA team that was over in Japan, and that takes a toll on you. And we all felt like what Gabe needed was rest. I mean, he went through it's a tough thing. I think that anybody that's coached pitchers can tell you this. When you transition somebody from a normal rotation spot to going into the uncertainty of the bullpen, and then also pitching in leverage, and then also extending every time that he pitched. I mean, he didn't have a whole lot of one-inning outings. That wears you down. And, you know, there was some internal talk about not letting him go to Team USA and shutting him down for the summer so we'd have him in the fall, but you never want to take the opportunity away from a kid to go pitch for Team USA. I certainly don't. So a lot of it went into that, and it was the same thing with Hagen his junior year. Going into his junior year, he had just come off back-to-back summers of pitching for Team USA, and we expected an expanded role for Hagen, and he had just done the exact same thing that Gackle did. So there's a lot of parallels. But we just felt like the thing he needed more than anything, the thing that he wanted less than anything, was rest. Like, if anybody knows this kid, he doesn't want to sit there and watch everybody play and compete. He wanted to be out there doing it too. So I think it's one of those things as a coach where you have to save him from himself a little bit and just pull the reins back, let him train with our wonderful strength coach, and then give himself the best opportunity to have a great season.
We're 4.5 months removed now from Gage Woods' no-hitter at the World Series. As you reflect back on that, I haven't talked to you about it since that afternoon. I mean, I'm sure things have kind of made more sense in your mind. Maybe you're able to remember a little bit more details about what had happened. What do you recall?
I recall the first inning. So this is like Woody is notorious for looking at the scoreboard when he throws. Like, I think that everybody can figure out he's looking to see how hard he's throwing. And that's going to affect his outing, positively or negatively, if we've seen in the past. But he was throwing like 1,000 miles an hour in the bullpen. And I'm just sitting there like, please God, let that thing say 96. And he throws the first bullet, and it's 97. And you can see him kind of glance back and just shake his head like, okay, I'm good. And so I knew it was going to be a pretty good day. And then he yanked a fastball in the opposite batter's box, which he tends to do early in the outings because there's so much adrenaline. And like you guys that watch that no-hitter, you can figure it out. Like, the guy pitches with his hair on fire. And I was like, if he can just steady himself and get back in the zone here or in the next two pitches, he's going to at least get out of the first inning. And the next pitch is a fastball at the top of the strike zone, swing and miss. And you're like, okay, he's starting to kind of figure it out. And really, it was like the fourth or the fifth inning when I stopped talking to him. And then I had to go talk to him in the eighth inning, and I remember this specifically because he's coming off the field. The guy had called time, and Woody was standing on the mound. He like spit at him. I don't know what he did. It wasn't nothing that we condone, but nothing that we were going to stop him from doing at that point in the day. And Coach Van Horn starts yelling at me to calm him down, and I'm just like, what, you want me to talk to this guy right now? That's a no. He's throwing a no-hitter. So I was like, I got him. And I went over and talked to him in the dugout. He looked like he was about to kill me. And I'm just like, man, I just got to ask, like, are you good? And then, like, some four-letter words came out, and, like, I had to back up. And that's when you knew it was like, okay, he's really going to do this thing. I had no doubt when he went back out for the ninth inning, like, this is getting done, and he's going to do it. And when he hit the guy, or I guess when, the guy leaned in mm-hmm. and he got strike three, I was like, well, this thing's over. I mean, he's definitely punching the next guy out. And I don't know, there's things that you see when guys are going to be really good. Like down in Arlington the year before when Hagen was throwing in the Oregon State game, before the game you knew he was going to be good, just not how good. And it was the same thing for Woody. It's like you watch them pitch, you watch them, and I'm sure Coach Jordan can attest to this. Like, there's a look in their eye when it's going to be really good. Like, there's some fake stuff you get to see some guys do too, but like, there ain't nothing fake about what he was doing or what Hagen was doing or what any of those guys do sometimes. It's like, you can tell, you can just look at him, you can talk to him. The way they interact, the way they walk around, it was a little different. That day was certainly a little different at the beginning of it, and obviously we saw what happened at the end of it.
I don't know if you remember the first thing I asked you when I saw you in the hallway. I said, are you glad you didn't start the left-hander? Because you guys had talked about that. And I think this goes into, you know, kind of the balance that you guys have to strike as coaches. The day before over at Creighton Prep, the question was Murray State, I think they were hitting like 44 points better against right-handers than they were left-handers. And so there was a question about, do you start Landon Bidelsees in this game instead of Gage? I remember Van Horn saying something like, the thing we don't want to do is – start him, and then it doesn't go well, and then you're asking yourself, what if? At some point, you just kind of have to trust your gut as a coach.
Yeah, I think that you got to trust your guys, too. Like, if you look back and look at what had happened for Gage in the previous 3 weeks, it was just starting to get really good. Like, he had the Creighton outing where he struck out, like, 13 guys or something like that, and then the Tennessee outing where I thought they did a really good job with him, but he was bouncing back better, and his stuff was getting better, and you got to bet on what had been going well for you to a certain extent, and then also what you know about people. And Gage had been through it for 2 years, right? It's been a roller coaster in his career, and he deserved that start, whether they were hitting 150 points better off righties or not. And when you're in that moment and it's a must-win game, that was going to send us home if we lose to Murray State. I'm not leaving Gage Wood not pitching there. Like, he's pitching in that game. It's the same thing as the decision of, like, who are you going to start in game one? Somebody asked me that question before the World Series. Like, are you going to start Root, or are you guys going to play the matchup game? I was like, Zach Root got us here. What are we talking about? Of course we're going to start Zach Root. It's the same thing with Woody. In that moment, it was like, maybe there's a matchup that you like a little bit better, but if we don't win, the season's over anyway, and I just left a first-rounder in the holster, I'm not doing that. And I think that you do have to trust your gut, as much as we all rely on analytics, advanced analytics, and everything that we do have access to, and the great resources that we have at Arkansas, and we use everything under the sun. Like, if it exists, we got it. And the most important thing we have is we know our players, and we trust our players, and we have our players' backs. Like, I can't imagine going to Gage Wood after all he'd been through for us, the sacrifices he'd made to come back when he didn't have to. He didn't have to come back last year. And there was nothing saying that, like, Gage Wood was going to be a second or a third rounder no matter what. Like, no matter what. As soon as he threw in Arlington and he was throwing 97, 98 miles an hour, and there was every scout in the sun saw him do that, and there was no injury that required surgery, he could have taken it to the house last year and just been like, I'm good, I'm not going to pitch, I'm not going to try to pitch. And knowing what I knew about him and how hard he fought to come back, maybe earlier than he even should have, he deserved the opportunity to pitch. And it's the same thing that when we're making the lineup out and they're asking somebody's opinion in here about, like, it matchups matter, but so do people. And if you have the right people in your building, like we felt like we have with last year's team, we hope we have with this year's team, you're going to trust those people to go do their job. And you're not going to take that away from a kid that's done so much for you. Like, these players that we coach, they're not assets. Like, these are our kids. And there's no way we're going to ever make a decision solely what a piece of paper says. Yeah. Like, you make some decisions with your heart sometimes. Sometimes you're wrong, and you live with that. But I would much rather live with Gage Wood going out and laying an egg against Murray State than not pitching him and somebody else that's not invested as much. And no offense to Landon. Somebody else who's not invested in as much as he has into the program. I'm not doing that to that kid. No way.
We're running out of time. One more question for each of you. Bobby, we'll start here. Fall ball's over. First game is February the 13th. Am I right about that? February 13th against Oklahoma State down in Arlington. What's the next 3 months look like?
Yeah, so the period we're in now is, I mean, we call it like small group stuff. So on the offensive side, it's kind of like a car wash. It's like everyone's got a 40-minute little station with us. So for us, it's a really long day. It can be stretched out to like 5 or 6 hours. But for the players, I think they really like it. It's 40 minutes to an hour of swing work, and then they really get after it in the weight room. So we kind of try to tailor it similar to like a pro off season from a strength standpoint. So, I mean, I guess that's the answer to that. It's a lot of weight room stuff, kind of building the engine, so to speak, for the marathon they're about to start.
Nate, big picture offensively, what did you see in the fall, and what do you hope to see by the time preseason practice starts?
I think this team is pretty athletic. We can run probably better than about any team I've had at the University of Arkansas so far. There's some real speed there that we can utilize. I think I'd like to see us continue to develop with our power and our ability to drive the baseball. Ryder Helfrich's a guy that we obviously feel like we can count on in that aspect, and Cam Kojal's, you know, shown that before, and obviously Kuhio Aloy and Nolan Souza to a certain extent, and him coming off of injury this year. But yeah, we have a lot of guys that just need to do it at this level. And, you know, from a scoring standpoint, you need to be versatile and dynamic, and we want to be able to score in multiple ways, but we also just need to be able to drive the baseball and hit balls very hard and score quickly with extra base hits. And so I want to see us continue to get stronger in the weight room and hit develop with our power game as well.
Matt, we'll end with you. NCAA has changed the rules this year where you can start preseason earlier. I think you can start 5 weeks before the season begins now, which that would be even colder than January 27th when it usually happens. Do you guys plan to utilize that entire window? And how much do you think that helps in terms of giving your pitchers a longer runway to get ready for the first game?
We'll use every single day of that window for sure. But to answer the second part of that, it's a huge benefit to us. We've been fighting with the NCAA at a conference level for the last 5 years to change this rule. It was a 3-week ramp up, which is like people wonder why you see injuries in February and early March. And if you get 3 weeks with your players when you're around them and they're throwing the baseball at super high velocities, which is what our guys do and most people do in the SEC, what do you think's going to happen if you don't around them a lot? Like, it forces you to do all kinds of things to be able to try to manage what's going on with workloads. And having 2 extra weeks is hugely, hugely beneficial to us. And it was a long fight to be able to get these rules changed. Myself and other pitching coaches going to the conference level, to the NCAA level, and just fighting, like having different opinions read and written and sent to the people that make decisions to get this thing done. So we're super proud that it happened as a baseball for college baseball. But we'll start as soon as we possibly – I think the first day we can start is the 12th of January now, which is great. That's almost two full extra weeks. We'll utilize that time to be able to give our guys extra time to ramp up, certainly. They can finish their throwing progression with us now instead of not being around us, which is a dangerous time. You know, if you're a pitching coach or you're a position coach or whatever you're doing, when your players are being asked to get ready for high-level things on their own, when they don't have to do that at any point of the season except for right there when it's the most important time of the year, it makes us sleep a little bit better that now they'll be doing it under our guidance. A lot of our guys are self-motivated and they do a great job, and you know, it's been fine over the last couple of years, but you have had some injuries early in the season with a couple of really, really impactful pitchers. And am I saying that it never would have happened had this? I am saying it would have mitigated the risk quite a bit. So I'm glad that this is happening. We're super excited at the conference level and at the NCAA level that now we have a chance to have our hands on our players when it matters. Because it would be like asking the football team to get ready for the season in 3 weeks. How ridiculous is that? And we don't have to do that anymore, thankfully. Coach Jorn and people that were doing the job when he was doing the job had to lay the groundwork for this by letting everybody – no, I'm serious – by letting everybody know how this just wasn't right. And I've had conversations with him numerous times about, like, this is crazy that we're doing this right now. And, you know, I think that the people that came and had the job, that were doing the job before I did the job here, are really the reason why it gets changed. And we're just thankful that it did get changed.
Guys, this was fun. I've been covering the team for a long time. I've never seen a time where all the assistant coaches sat down and did something like this. So really appreciate you guys agreeing to do it.
We hope you enjoyed our conversation with Matt Hobbs, Nate Thompson, and Bobby Wernis at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. We appreciate them being there. We'll hope to see you again on our show tomorrow. We'll be back in studio as Ethan Westerman and I preview Arkansas and Mississippi State. Hope that we see you at our website, wholehogsports.com, or on the show tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody.